fellow veterans and friends of veterans. This is a wake-up call. We are in a state of emergency here in Los Angeles, but the Los Angeles VA and the mayor and everybody else that claims they're going to end veteran homelessness don't believe it. This is a wake-up call, and we're here tonight to deliver the truth, and the truth can be painful, but we welcome you, and we're going to have a very hard-hitting talk this evening. I got two very powerful individuals, Terrence Gomes, a veteran, and he's chairman of the Los Angeles Neighborhood Coalition of Councils. And tell us a little bit about your history in the military and what you're doing now.
Well, I'm going to focus on tonight really what we're here for. It's not about me. It's really about what the plan is and what we need to do. I want to talk about the coalition itself. It's Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Coalition. There's 96 neighborhood councils who are part of the coalition. And our purpose and role is to be a conduit between the people and local city government, and to be also to help have local services be directed to be able to help with whatever needs, whether it's potholes, sidewalks, tree trimming, and the homeless situation that's currently facing the city of Los Angeles. So that's our major role, though.
You served in the...
I was with the Coast Guard.
Coast Guard, right. So he's a veteran. And I really commend what you're doing with this coalition, because it's from the bottom up, the grassroots, where it needs to be, instead of filtered down. And you're a force of power. And I really admire, and I'm really grateful to be aligned with the coalition for what we're working on. And we'll be addressing that.
Well, we're proud to be able to do and help that for all veterans in the city of Los Angeles. And if we could spread it across the United States, we'd also love to do that, too. But we're actually focusing on the local aspects of it right now.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a role model for the rest of the nation. I really do. Because it's pretty obvious that the powers that be don't know what they're doing, because they just keep kicking the can down, if you will. And it's been a lot of talk, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of promises, but we've got too many here in the Capitol for homeless veterans, so there's too many on the streets. And we're right down here in Skid Row. This is Skid Row Studio, and we're very honored to be here. We're at the belly of the beast, and I want to introduce our next guest, Ted Hayes, who is without a doubt one of the most, the biggest... probably homeless expert. He was homeless. He built the famous Dome Village, and very successful. The rent on the property went from about $2,000 a month to $18,000, made it prohibitive. But we want to talk with Ted and use that same program over at the Los Angeles VA. But Ted, I want to tell a little about you, but I also wanted to let people know that your daughter...
See, always upstages me. I'm getting tired of this.
Now, but people don't realize everything he has done. And his daughter is a gold medal Olympic champion in the 110 meters, is it?
Yes, sir.
Yep. And simply amazing.
2004 Greek Olympic.
So the pedigree is there throughout. A lot of people don't know that, but it's very admirable in a race where they're lost by 1/100th of a second.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just simply amazing.
Yeah, anything.
Yeah, in 110 hurdles.
Or it's amazing. Or missed the plane.
Yeah.
Or catch a cold.
Yeah.
Spend all your life to get there and you get a cold.
Yeah, everything. So, but let's talk about you and what you've done
there.
But
we thank God for that little moment in our life. We appreciate God. He did that. So thanks to him for that.
And, but give us a little bit of history on.
Well, you know, Bob. Thank you for inviting me on, you know, to support the veterans. This is my 30th anniversary of being involved with the homelessness crisis, beginning here in downtown L.A. I was arrested January the 2nd, 1985, with the County Board of Supervisors for protesting, and been there ever since. And I came on purpose to be homeless so that I could see what it was, see what's causing it, and see if there was a way out of it. And also that if I should be able to speak on behalf of homeless people, I wouldn't come from my head, but I'd be coming from my heart based on real life experience. And thank God he showed me what to do. And one of the first steps that we did was the Dome Village as part of the first step to the national plan to end homelessness. And the situation 30 years later, I thought it was bad. I thought it was bad 30 years ago downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's bad. It's 10 times bad.
Yes.
I was driving down there one day, just, you know, because I try to drive through, just keep me reminded. I started crying. I had to turn around. Get out of here. And the fact that, I don't want to sound racist or anything, but the fact that 95, you know, black folks, black Angelenos, are only 11% of the general population here. Only 11%, if that. Yet, in downtown L.A., 95% of the homeless are black men, then black women, and on down the others. And it's amazing to watch city council people like Bernard Parks, Herb Wesson, and the other fella, and Mark Lee Thomas sit there and watch people living in worse than animals situation. Our pets don't live like that. Even dogs roaming streets don't live like that. But yet here we have sanctioned filth where veterans, people who gave their lives for us, have to live like that. I'm too through, man.
Well, you know, this is great.
I'm sorry for dying.
No,
my
no problem.
Didn't know we started.
Dad, I can never hear enough of you. I wanted to say also that we have founded the Veterans Revolution. It'll be, we're coming up on our 7th anniversary, which happens also to be Ted's birthday, but it's on March 9th, 2008. And this coming Sunday will be our 7th anniversary, and we will have our 364th consecutive Sunday protesting the biggest land fraud scandal in American history, compounded by some of the most heinous crimes against humanity, the men and women who have defended this country.
Yep.
And if that wasn't bad enough, we won a lawsuit.
Yes, sir.
But there were 9 illegal contracts on here.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest settlement scandal in American history, mm-hmm. behind closed doors, threw it out, just said, we're going to vacate it because we got a plan. Mm. And what's interesting, I want to touch a little bit because we're down here at Skid Row, and as you know, there's a lot of news this past week where an individual was shot by the police.
Yes.
He was a convict himself. He robbed banks and had other people's identity and all.
He was, in fact, robbing his neighbor, homeless guy. That's why the homeless guys called the police, because he was robbing and oppressing homeless people.
Yeah.
For the thug, cat who pistol whipped
me. Well, but what you can see there is this crime, corruption, rape, murder, everything goes on down there.
Every day.
And we just, as you mentioned, this big scandal with the settlement, mm-hmm. of the so-called settlement. Let me call it, I call it a Trojan horse, because we still don't know what's inside that settlement. But what's interesting is that the secretary of the VA, Robert McDonald, was down Skid Row on January 29th on a homeless count.
Right, I heard about that.
Yeah, and he, we had planned to have Jay Handel here tonight. Unfortunately, he had a very bad throat condition.
Who's Jay Handel?
Pardon me?
Who's Jay Handel?
Jay Handel, the of the West L.A., he's a chairman of the West L.A. Community Council.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. You'd know him.
Yes.
He was, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I attended the hearing on the count on the 28th, and Jay gave about an hour lecture on what we could and couldn't do, and we were not allowed to engage in anybody, find out if they were homeless veterans or whatever.
Right. Hands-off approach.
Yeah. And nevertheless, when McDonald was down there, he intervened and asked him, guy, if he's a veteran, he says, yeah, and what unit and everything. I said, Special Forces. So was I. Come to find out, a big lie. But not only did he lie.
Is that what that flap was all about?
Yeah.
The other week? I was hearing something at the side of my ear. So that's what that's not here.
That, right down there, Skid Row.
Right,
that's
why
it's big. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But he cheated. He broke the rules and he lied.
What do you call that, stolen valor?
Yeah. Because he hit all three of them on there. Because at the West Point, he's a West Point graduate and the cadet, they take an oath, an honor code says, I will not lie, cheat, or steal.
Oh, no.
Or tolerate those that do.
Oh, no.
But, you know, here it, well, like you said, as bad as Skid Row, isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
That the secretary of the VA goes down and pulls that blunder. But why should it surprise us when the day before he essentially stole our land away from us? We had a judgment. We had it. We were reclaiming it. They pulled the scam behind closed doors and vacated that judgment and said, we'll create an exit strategy down the line. Well, we could go on about that, but I want to get into the issues of what we're talking about here. And I want to, but first of all, I do want to point out that on with the neighborhood council, I had met before the council back in September 14th.
Correct.
And I spoke before the council, and we got a motion passed to support the judgment. And that was a powerful one. We had the whole community, you know, the community council. Sure. We got the L.A. Board of Supervisors. I'll tell you, I worked hard. It took me 5 months to get the L.A. Board of Supervisors. One after the other, we got VSOs, the American Legion, the American GI Forum. Go down the list, and we right. had it.
Right.
And and we sent the secretary a petition mm-hmm. asking him to withdraw the appeal mm-hmm. and to support the judgment. Mm-hmm. He comes out here. Of course, he never responded. Mm-hmm. And what did he do? He did the complete opposite. He vacated the judgment.
Wow.
And, but on January 3rd of this year, Rafer Johnson, another gold medalist.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What a hero. Can't speak enough. He spoke before the council. And I talked with Rafer today. We were going to try to get him down in action phone, but he had a whole commitment.
Right.
But I'm going to read what he basically said before the council on January 3rd. And he says, I believe everyone involved in ending the homelessness of our veterans should have been, and certainly by now should be, acting in a, he's got it all caps here, state of emergency. Los Angeles has the largest population of homeless veterans in the nation. There have been pledges made to end veteran homelessness by the end of 2015. That isn't good enough. When there is an emergency, it is imperative to respond immediately. Why aren't we using the nearly 400 acres of land at the West L.A. Veterans property to immediately provide temporary and permanent housing for our homeless veterans? There is a state of emergency here in Los Angeles, and the time is to act now. And, you know, very profound. And he delivered that same message before yes. The council. And I want you to read the motion, because it was passed by the council.
Right. And what it basically stated was that the Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Coalition recognizes Los Angeles to be in a state of emergency for homeless veterans and hereby requests that the Los Angeles City Council direct the City of Los Angeles with all of its resources and the Veterans Administration to unify and open a large-scale crisis humanitarian relief project on this land to immediately house and care for thousands upon thousands of disabled homeless veterans. And that passed unanimously.
Yes, it did. In four sentences.
Yes.
It summed it up. Now, we didn't hear anything on that. There's been
excuse me. So that I'm clear. Who was that from? Was that from the West?
No, that was from the coalition.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
How many other?
96 neighborhood councils now.
All of them voted unanimously? They said that?
At the time that we did that, there was only 95. The representatives were there.
Yeah?
And the representatives that were attending the meeting, had unanimously passed that because they see what's going on. Because right now with the Veterans Commission, that's part of the mayor's office, had a meeting 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And what they showed in their figures that there are 6,500 men and women who served in our armed services who are currently homeless.
Right.
Now, that number, I don't know where they got it.
Right.
You know, because you read some publications, there's more. Some say less. Mm-hmm. But right now, we know at least the city is identifying 6,500 of them.
Okay.
And they say by December 31st, which is the end of 2015, the mayor has made a promise to eliminate veterans' homelessness.
Wow. He said that.
He's got
7 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at the time, it was 311 days, 7,400. Because when you look at a veteran who's homeless on the street, they live their life by hours. They don't live weeks or months. No. It's hours. It's whether when's the next time they're going to eat, where are they going to be able to have shelter.
Or use the bathroom.
Exactly. But the thing was is that we were looking at that amount of time that it was on a Monday. And Home for Good, which is one of the organizations that's helping to house the homeless or house the veteran homeless, said that this year alone they'll be doing, I think it was 3,700 of them. But they were part of the presentation to say that they were going to eliminate all of it. Wow. When you say there's 3,700, but there's 6,500, that's only 50% or roundabout numbers. When I was in school, 50% was a failure.
True.
Yep.
It's like coming in second place in a war.
Right. But that's what we're looking at. What can we do?
But there's no sense of urgency.
But why would they say something like that, knowing that that is an impossibility, that there is not even a plan?
They're politicians.
But maybe one of the organization, Home for Good, they were doing 50%. What can we do for the other 50%? Now, I know they had the VA plan that came out. I had talked to Congressman Ted Lieu's office, and I had asked specifically. I read the whole document, cover to cover, and the first thing I asked was, well, where's the budget for all this? And I still have not gotten a response back from the office.
Is that 16-page report?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? And again, four sentences. You guys put it together in four sentences. Mm-hmm. Rafer nailed it. You guys hammered it.
Yeah.
And a child looking at this would tell you, you go with this and not the other. But there's been no response.
I wouldn't say there's no response because I've been in contact with Council President Herb Wesson's office.
Okay.
And because of the elections, they were short-staffed, but they promised me that they would get on this right now because I asked for a council file to be started so that the city can start putting things together on how they are going to help with this problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just like years ago, we had 4 years ago, or was it five? I know 3 years ago for sure, I had talked to Ted Lieu's office when he was in the state. He was up in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I recommend is the Army, the military, all have mobile mess halls, and they also have tents. Why couldn't we set that up on the VA property, start doing that immediately? And I know some people that heard my comments said, well, isn't that mean to have them living in a tent? And I said, well, isn't it mean that they're living behind a dumpster right now?
Yeah.
And, because I thought this was the first step, at least get them off the street.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the number one step.
Get them the treatment at the VA. Whatever it may be, whether it's addiction, whether it's just the fact that they have mental illness, the fact that maybe they had it where just life happens and they ended up on the street, but give them that step up.
That's establishing it. A beachhead.
Exactly. Yep. But,
we've got the Army Corps of Engineers right here in Los Angeles. And like mm-hmm. you said, they go out and put bridges up in a day. They go back to 1975 after the fall of Saigon, the end of the Vietnam War. And there were 50,000 refugees here coming into Southern California. And in 10 days, at the Camp Pendleton. They set up 1,000 tents, 1,000 tents. I was down there. I don't want to sound like Brian Williams or something.
I'll be all right.
But I was there. I was not a Vietnamese refugee. I was a consultant there for a friend of mine who was the economic advisor for U.S. Silver Corporation. He was their chief economist, and they were coming in with gold. They had what they call a gold tail. It's a T-A-E-L. It's like a one-ounce wafer of gold. And the wives put them into like a money belt thing. Oh, mm-hmm. Some of them did. One group came in as a kind of a consortium. They had a duffel bag almost full of gold. It was about $500,000 there.
Wow.
But my job was to go out to get an interpreter and go to each of these tents and convey the message that if you had gold, that, you know, and I tell you that it didn't, you know, there was a very small few that had the gold and the rest just had the clothes on their back. And it didn't take me long to look around and see the despondency. And so I talked with my interpreter. I said, we're going to get this marketing ploy over quick. We're going to go right in. And I talked to them to reassure them that they made the right decision to come to the United States. We're a very grateful society.
Benevolent.
Very benevolent. And down there they had churches, synagogue, corporations, families. Everybody were sponsoring somebody. And in probably 6 months, it was over.
Yeah.
Everybody was, and you know,
they have a whole town now.
Yeah, they're very successful. But guess what? Here we are 40 years later, and nearly half, 47% of all the homeless veterans were from the Vietnam War.
Vietnam veterans.
And there are more nationwide, 60,000 homeless veterans. That's more than were killed in the Vietnam War. Mm. That's sick. I'm going to tell you, that is a sick society. It allows that to happen. And if we don't stand up and put serious demands, and this is a starting point, the state of emergency. Because how do you do something? They declared a state of emergency and you had 50,000 refugees come in here.
Well, I think it's pretty fantastic. I'm still blown away by the fact that your organization of 96
neighborhood councils
actually agreed on that single four-sentence
powerful
paragraph thing there. That's.
But I want to do something. Recently, there was a congressional hearing in Washington, D.C., and it was about the misappropriation, misuse of that land and everything. And while we can't listen to all of it, I want to go to the part where there was this motion was introduced. And if we could play a little bit on that motion, it starts out about a veteran who was fined $1,000 for taking some food out of the dumpster. But actually,
that's not funny.
I'm not sure if it's the same one. I know one, George, and I'm very proud of George. He's 180% disabled, and he took some bottles and cans out and got fined $150. Apparently the ACLU knew somebody that was fined $1,000. But let's listen to this. About the homeless and then about the motion.
Ms. Murphy, I think I'm directing this to you, but it could be to Dr. As well. But we heard today from the American Legion about a recent article it published that explains how a mentally disabled homeless veteran in West LA was arrested by VA police for taking food out of a trash can. He was fined $1,000, which he paid by collecting aluminum cans, which is absolutely deplorable to think that this situation is going on. Into what account, though, was that money deposited, and what's it used for, that fine and fee money?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm not clear what fee money you're referring to.
The fine. He was fined $1,000. So he raised the money by collecting aluminum cans and paid the VA police $1,000. Where does that money go? What account does that money get deposited into?
I don't have that information, but we can get that for you. I'm guessing sub-revenue account that tickets and fines are paid to.
Could you follow up with the committee and provide us a detailed account of where every dollar of that money that he spent went? Can we get that report by the end of the week? Is that possible?
We can try to find out, yes.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I have one more question. On Ms. Murphy, again, on January 3rd, Los Angeles Neighborhood Council Coalition unanimously voted in favor of a motion that declared Los Angeles in a state of emergency for homeless veterans. The motion urges the city and the VA to open a large-scale crisis humanitarian relief project on the West LA property to immediately house and care for thousands of veterans and thousands of homeless and disabled veterans. Does the VA agree with that and support that motion?
I would presume we would. In its essence, yes. I think our master planning process will lead us to where we want to go with that.
So have you heard of that before, the declare of emergency?
I have not heard of that proposition, no.
Why?
Go ahead, Doctor.
No, I've not heard of it either.
There you go.
Why?
I mean, even when it was presented to her, she hem-hawed around and talked about a master plan 6 months down the line or something. She still doesn't understand what the words state of emergency are because she's not at ground zero. She doesn't understand.
But the word
is
now.
It a master plan for our future homeless generation of VA vets?
Probably, yeah. That is.
But you know something? The master plan, we have a master plan. It was signed in 1888. It's called the Deed of 1888. States five times that land is to be permanently maintained as a national home for disabled soldiers. We are the capital for homeless veterans. You want to go to UCLA baseball game? Go there. You want to go to Brentwood School? Go there. But don't be a homeless veteran.
Well, looking at it, though, when you actually say it, we do have 10% of the homeless veterans in the city when you say that there's 65,000 nationwide. And there's 6,500 here.
There you go.
Yeah. That's 10%.
That's what, 50 states?
Yeah.
57.
No, but 50 states.
Well, I'm messing with you. That's what the guy said. He said 57, something like that.
Ted, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, but forget about it.
No, go ahead. Weigh in, please.
I'm trying to think of what it was. It was a question having to do with the VA. Oh. Well, okay.
I don't speak for the VA.
I know, but when you gave that, when you passed that motion, did that get on the mayor's desk?
It got everywhere. It got to the city council.
So
it got to the mayor's office.
So somewhere we have a disconnect in that the veterans guys, when asked about the congresswoman, what's up with that? They did not know.
Yeah, the VA doesn't know.
How come they did not know?
If
it was on the mayor's desk.
Yeah.
Somebody should have told the VA, you guys, this. Our sub-body here, the city council, community councils, want you to be aware of this.
But that was 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. This is what's so amazing. 2 months ago, a state of emergency. Right, and that went into Congress. And they still hem-hawing around. I think it's time to weigh in big time on these people and say, you know.
We have the power of the people to be able to actually have an effective change with it, and that's what we're going to be working on. I promise that I will work further.
Oh, I know.
Do you have any kind of legal recourse? What do you have any teeth that when you put something like this together, and this government that chose you to represent the grassroots needs of the community reject this? Do you have some kind of legal course you could take to force them to obey your? They commissioned you guys.
We're advisory. Mm-hmm. And that's our role.
Oh, that's it.
But the thing is, though, is we represent 5 million people when you look in the city of Los Angeles. It's not only the residents. It's people who live, work, or own real property in the city of Los Angeles. Say somebody from San Bernardino works in downtown L.A. They're our stakeholder.
Could this organization, this is unity, unprecedented unity. The only thing that's unified in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Can these guys maybe get a ballot measure that puts real teeth on the city council to obey you when you make a motion like this? To at least get on the telephone, call the VA, and said, our representative body has said to you guys, this is what we want to see done now. Are you aware of that? Can they?
We can work with them to be able to have an effective change.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's ridiculous.
Well, it is. I mean, when you look at this, and by the way, when you talk to Herb Weston, I think.
Yes,
Council
President,
right,
yes.
Yes, right. Convey what Rafer Johnson said to him, and I think that might light a little bit of a fire under him, because Rafer is, I talked with him today, and this, you know, what an incredible human being. He came from himself from severe poverty and in the South, and their family moved up to Kingsburg in California. And he had all these mentors, high school coaches, teachers, and everything, as we all had in growing up, to guide us along. And he became the best that he can be. And he has a book. It's called The Best That I Can Be. And Rafer, you know, marched with Dr. King, Bobby Kennedy, Cesar Chavez. He's always been there. And this is one of his big missions now on this homeless veteran issue. And I've known Rafer for about close to 15 years now, I think, and always as kind, gentle, but a force. And I can tell the tempo is picking up of his frustration. Because they're not doing anything. It is simply amazing. These are the men and women that pledged their lives to defend this country. And we are not taking care of them first and foremost. We already have the land. It would be a different situation if we had the problem. Where are we going to put them?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And many people who, when they hear what I have to say and the motion that we had put forth, they always ask me, well, what about all the other homeless? And I said, well, we have to deal with all that. But the way I look at it is we already have the facilities there. We have the money with the federal government there to do it. It just needs, we need to do a coordinated effort to get it completely done. And I think we can get it done by the end of the year. Seriously, if we all work together.
If we all work together.
But when you have the federal government here, the state government here, your local city of Los Angeles here, and they're just starting to communicate together. But I think the mayor is really working hard to try to get, because when I talked to his staff after they got the letter that we sent to the mayor's office and also to the city council, I mean, they invited me immediately to the Veterans Commission meeting that we were there all at. So
right.
they are trying to work forward with it, and I think we need to come together and put more pressure on it.
I agree.
But also solutions too, though. Because once we get them to the property, there's no infrastructure there to have them right now. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, because you have these empty buildings that need retrofitting and all the other things. However, Mr. Hayes here, as we know, with his Dome Village, two veterans can put up a dome, a geodesic dome, in a half a day, right?
Okay.
And they cost, at the upside, like $20,000.
It all depends on what you want to have the interior.
Exactly. How many can live in there?
Two
people.
You could get more if you wanted to, but the
you want to keep it.
To have the privacy. But two of them, we could have up, you know, they've got a MacArthur Field, which is a kids' soccer field. Now they rent out to the kids. And there's a couple acres there. And by the way, the city of Los Angeles has 12 acres of our land with a squatter's lease. They don't even have a lease agreement. They pay zero rent. And there's a public dog park on there. It doesn't get any more disgraceful than all this. And the public, I am a great believer in our fellow man, and I think we saw what you did there with the 96 councils and all. Because everybody has other family members. Somebody knows somebody who was a veteran, and they know that they did something very great on our behalf. Now, I really believe if they knew that the mayor is trying to end veteran homelessness, he's not talking about West L.A. yet. And by the way, there is a 12 acres that the city has. And I might add, if you go on the other side of the freeway, 60 acres back in 1962 of veterans property was transferred over to the GSA, where the big federal building is. They have 28 acres. And the community of Westwood got 32 acres for a public park, their only public park in the whole community of Westwood. That land is so valuable, they're not going to use it for anything but real estate development. But they look at it and say, it's just veterans land. Let's take it. And you got UCLA paying $5,000 a month for 10 acres. Apartments go for that, luxury apartments over there.
But they also have, though, the former laundromat that's there, correct?
Well, it's Sodexo, Marriott. It's there.
Yeah, but aren't they out of it?
No.
They're still there?
Still there, yeah.
They're also, okay.
They were supposed to leave like 2 years ago. There was a big article and everything.
Yeah, well, that's there. What I read. So I thought they were gone. And with that building, they could repurpose it to easily house.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do? Yeah.
Well, you know, I challenged Henry Wiseman. This was in his district. Mm-hmm. And, again, I've been at this for 7 years, a little bit beyond that, but really serious going after this issue. And of course, he would never talk to me, and I had a chance encounter with him at the VA about three years ago, I guess it was. And I hit him right off the bat about spending $20 million for this building 209. It's 70 years old. It's a rat-infested, vacant building. And it, when they finish it, it's going on 2.5 years, it will produce 65 rooms. We have 20,000 homeless veterans. And by the way, the 6,500 number they throw out, that's really chronic homeless. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk about the other number. But that's all right. 6,500 is still a big number. Right. But if you're only building 65 rooms and you have 6,500, why are you spending $20 million and you don't want to put up $1 million for even an emergency shelter? Now, when I hit him with, and he could never deny it. And I said, Congressman, I said, at that time, it was only 38 years, I said, you've never appropriated $1 for one blanket for one homeless veteran. I said, you can't deny it. He said, well, yeah, I've done a lot of, you know, sort of rambling on. And
I said the Pledge of Allegiance a couple of times.
That's very interesting.
But, yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, but he's an alumni of UCLA and... as is Xavier Flamey. I mean, there's so much politics here, and we know we have to deal with politics, but not with VA problem. That's where Rafer is about it. It's that, you know, we got to, you know, hold our nose a lot of times and turn our head, but this is not one thing.
Well, going back to that, very interesting that you said that during his whole term in office, never appropriated one blanket. But as part of the West Side Thanksgiving, we gave out 1,500 blankets on one day, on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah. No, you guys, this is what needs to be exposed and compared to let the public know.
Right.
Because Waxman has always kowtowed to that wealthy elite group over here, particularly the Veterans Park Conservancy. By the way, I'm going to read something. I invited Jeff Hall is the publisher of the Brentwood News, and I invited him to be on our program. And they never even responded, and I didn't expect it. But in the current issue, it's a monthly issue. It's a February 20th issue. And he talks about the settlement over there. And it's the title of it is A Brentwood Miracle. A Brentwood Miracle. Not veterans. Supposedly, if it was settled for the benefit of veterans, it would have been a veteran miracle. But we all know it was settled for the benefit of Brentwood. And he says, it's possible a miracle just happened right here in Brentwood. Now everyone, the VA, the ACLU, leaseholders, and neighbors, is being asked by Secretary McDonald to contribute to the ultimate solution. And everybody seems to be jumping on board. This is huge, really huge. I would go so far as to call this a miracle, and probably a life-saving one at that in many cases. Now, think about it. This is Brentwood. Now, we just talk about 96 community councils. This is the attitude of Brentwood, like it's about them. They don't realize. Now, Brentwood is not one of those councils, as I understand it. Is it sanctioned?
They are their own Brentwood Community Council, as opposed to the fully sanctioned and chartered neighborhood council.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, how'd the dog go?
In 1999, different people have taken credit for it. Uh-huh. The voters approved by a charter amendment to create the neighborhood council system.
Okay.
Which was there to direct city services to the community and also to be an advisory. To have an advisory role, to be able to be a what I call a conduit.
Sure.
Because that's what we are.
Yeah.
We work with the stakeholders day in and day out. They're our neighbors. They're our friends.
It's grassroots.
They're the people who are in our neighborhoods and are out our neighbors. You know, they drive through and all that. So to be a conduit between them and local city government, meaning City Hall.
Sure.
And that's what we do. You know, we have the 15 council members. We have the mayor. Mm-hmm. We have the city controller. All elected officials, mm-hmm. along with the city attorney, mm-hmm. forgot about him, mm-hmm. To make sure that we could all work together to increase and protect the quality of life.
But Brentwood has a separate.
They're on their own. They're not part of the neighborhood council system.
Why is that? Because they're Brentwood.
I don't know. It's a decision that they decided years ago.
Before the council came into existence.
No, because when the councils were created, areas were creating their own neighborhood councils. They were all falling over each other to make sure that they had it.
Except Brentwood.
It's so important, though. Yeah. Because when you look at the Valley, why were they on the ballot for succession? To be their own city.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they weren't getting representation. And I think the neighborhood, I know the neighborhood councils have done a tremendous job to be able to change the culture in the city.
You saved the city from a civil war.
Could be. Basically, that's what it was.
Yeah, man.
The North, the Valley versus the South, everything on the other side of the hill.
You guys saved it.
But, it's interesting that when Mike Bonin was elected the city council, he came to the Brentwood Community Council, and I was there. And they ask, everybody, what's on your mind, mm-hmm. and of course, traffic, potholes, parking, mm-hmm. minor crimes in that area. Nancy Friedman, who was the chairperson of the Brentwood Community Council, her question, what can you do about changing the perception that Brentwood is nothing but a bunch of rich white people that don't care about the rest of the city?
Wow.
And I'm thinking, perception? It's a reality, and this kind of stuff just goes right out. That here, apparently the secretary of the VA has asked the community of Brentwood to be the settlement in this whole thing. Amazing. They don't even come to me. I'm a veteran. I live in Brentwood, and of course, we were the ones.
Come on. You're just a veteran. You're just a troublemaker out there. You don't count.
Well, to be honest with you, it should be the whole city because the whole city's facing this crisis.
Absolutely.
All the way from
the east side
to the west side.
That's right.
They think it's for them.
Right. Valley all the way to the harbor.
Yeah.
We see it everywhere.
Absolutely. Yep.
That's why I'm so proud to have you on board.
And that's big time.
You are the voice that should be, because you represent the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The whole
more
city.
More than anybody else's town.
Exactly.
More than the mayor,
thank you for all that credit, but there are many, many, many people who work very hard in the neighborhood council system. And we're all looking for a common good.
But you're the voice of it,
the conductor right now.
I've been elected as chair by my other neighbor council to be able to represent. Yes, absolutely. But
again,
don't give me all the credit.
We understand that. But they recognize that, and you as a person that can hold all this together and move us forward. That's good. Because they don't want to be putting out all that work for nothing.
Well, it's good people behind me that's helping me.
Exactly.
I may be going forward, but they're back there holding me up to be able to go forward.
That's why I'm so proud of this whole thing. Now, consider this, that you represent 96 communities, essentially. You're the representative.
Right. As the chair of LANC, yes, the coalition.
But
when you read the settlement, it talks about the community. Have you been invited to this so-called stakeholders meeting?
Maybe they haven't gotten the invitation to me yet.
It's on the way. It's a slow mail.
But as we're working forward to this, we're looking for more people to jump on board.
Sure.
And as this train is moving forward, we're going to hit that destination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we have to get there, though.
But what I want to do is look at this. We've got a motion here,
mm-hmm.
and we're calling a state of emergency.
Right.
A crisis shelter. None of that is being addressed. The council itself, the coalition, isn't even being recognized. It's gone all the way to the congressional hearing, and we still don't have anything going on. It's pretty amazing. I think when you look at it, they're not serious about solving this problem on the West LAVA. They have ulterior motives. They want to. And I've said it all along, when they've got these called VASHHUD vouchers, rent vouchers, they give them to a veteran and warehouse him somewhere far away. And then they say, see, we don't have a homeless problem. We don't need this Los Angeles VA. Trust me, that's what's behind this whole thing.
How do they get their services if they're all the way out?
Oh, they're sending them out now. They're saying they're sending them out. That question, you're absolutely right, the supportive care.
That'll go on for temporary. After a while, it'll fade off and no one's
absolutely
watching.
Well, we cannot sustain that financially.
For the first 100 days, in their plan was to call it nothing more than warehousing 650 veterans for the month of April. And I sent an email saying, well, what happens in May, June, July, August?
But you see, if you have a home over here, if you invest instead of these vouchers going to these slumlords and everybody else, if you take that money and invest it into the home, you're going to have you know, a greater result. I want to read something real quick here about the home itself and when it was first established and the mission that they had on it. This is, it's a history of the National Home for Disabled Volunteers. Now, it was run, but they didn't have a VA when, obviously, back in those days. They didn't come into existence like 1930. It was run by a board of managers that consisted of the President of the United States, the Secretary of War at that time, it would be Secretary of Defense, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Nine members, three of them, one-third of them, the top of our whole system there. But it says, as described by the board of managers, the home is neither a hospital nor an almshouse, but a home where subsistence, quarters, clothing, religious instruction, employment when possible, and amusement are provided by the government of the United States. The provision is not a charity, but is a reward to the brave and deserving.
And freaking credible.
Isn't it? Now, they had it nailed there. Now we're talking about all these nonprofits and everybody else going here, there, and running around. It's as plain as could be that they had it nailed back then. Let me read some of the stuff they had back then. Excuse me. The barracks, resident halls, grand dining hall, church, hospital, dentist and barbers, day school, amusement hall, music hall, band, pagoda, associations of the home baseball club, stables and carriage, harness shop, farm and gardens, apple orchard, peach and pear orchard, vegetable gardens, chicken and livestock, at a police headquarters, a guardhouse, a jail, laundry, repairing shops, industrial resources of the home, workshop, sawmill and engine house, the wagon shop, upholstery shop, tin shop, the shoe shop, the tailor shop, broom factory, cigar factory, stocking manufactory, bookbindery, printing office, quartermaster department, post office, bulletin board. I mean, think about it. It was a
small
city.
Small town.
It was a city.
Yeah, before Brentwood was there.
Yeah, 40 years before Brentwood even came into existence. And but here you have it, that all of this is all we're asking is to return it to the home. Because remember, it's like your family. If you have a problem, you go home. You got brother, sister, family. They work with you. These are brothers and sisters that can work together. You know, I was wanted to reflect on something real quick on the POWs. And I know, too, Colonel Ken Huey and Colonel John Furr, both of them were POWs during the Vietnam War, were shot down. And what remarkable stories they have. And when you think about it, when they were shot down, each one was captured individually. They had no idea where they were, whatever. They were on their own. And they were beaten up, roughed up pretty much, and trying to get information out of them. And then they were thrown into the Hanoi Hilton. And that's when they communicated with each other through little taps of the Morse code and everything, and they were able to communicate. But that camaraderie is what kept them together.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I've come across other people, homeless, in this country and overseas. And they go through the programs, they get rehabilitated. They give them an apartment room way over there somewhere. And they get there and they're like this. Now what I do? I miss everybody.
Yep.
And they give up that apartment, head right back downtown.
Yep.
That's where they felt more comfortable. I think what you're proposing, what's being proposed here, is whatever we do with these guys, we must do it in sort of a community.
A veteran's community.
Type of thing.
One of the questions I ask when I come up on a homeless veteran is, did you enjoy or appreciate your military? Without fail, yes. And why? I enjoyed my unit.
How about the guys that got all shot up, though? Come back all broken up. What about those guys?
Well, you know, some of those, it's an interesting thing. They're in another world. There's no doubt.
Because I've heard a lot of those guys be saying, man, I want to get back to my unit. I'm like, what?
Yeah, the camaraderie. Because they got each other's back. You're out on the street, in the back alley. You're on your own.
And you know, I'm sorry.
Right, there's no support form or anything, and that's what the VA is supposed to provide for them.
But you see, they call it the VA. If you call it the home, it has a whole different concept. I've asked veterans.
Well, don't the Southern Gates on
Sawtelle? It says Soldier's Home, but they don't call it that. They should call it the Veterans Home. That's what the official title is. If I ask somebody and I said, have you been over to the VA? I don't want any part of the system. That's exactly what they'll say. But if you were to say, hey, let's go over to the home. Let's shoot a game of pool. Let's talk. Meet some guys. Might be in your unit or something. Like what's his name said he was looking for, McDonald. What are you going to do with him, McDonald, if you found a guy that was in your unit?
Right.
You're standing down on Skid Row.
Right.
Where are you going to go? What are you going to do with him?
You going to take him home?
Yeah.
No.
But you see, if we had that place where you had that front gate open.
Like Dome Village was like that.
Yeah,
Dome Village had a place where people could be in conflict and learn to get over the conflicts. They matured.
Sure. Right. But that's where I think, though, right now, currently, we need to go a step-by-step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. What's the first thing? Be able to have housing there for them.
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing, going back, state of emergency. Unless we announce it, but that's kind of
where. But to put up tents and have a mobile kitchen there, be able to have the facilities, they'd be able to get the services they need, and it's step-by-step-by-step.
I totally agree.
Because if we look at it where we're looking at a master plan of buildings and all, you know, like I said earlier, that is for our future generation.
Well, it is. Because we cannot allow the Afghanistan and Iraqi veterans to end up like the Vietnam veterans. It cannot happen. This is just...
But isn't it already happening?
It's already happening.
It is. It really is. It's, they're coming in. It's just the beginning of it. And what you're going to see, while some of them come back amputees and the brother, sister, children, wives, or whatever, it's kind of almost... I don't want to call it a novelty, but I mean, it's a new thing. They're involved. Each one of their lives starts evolving, and they forget this guy. Mom, dad die. You know, this goes on. The kids grow up, and you're on your own. Right. At the time you need the most help, you're going to be homeless, and that's why the home has to be. They called it a home for a special reason. It shouldn't be.
It's a psychological
thing. The connotation of what it actually is and what it represents.
But there shouldn't be a homeless
veteran.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No place like home.
There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this has been really a very inspiring program. I really enjoyed, and I wish we could go on longer because I know there's a lot to say and a lot to do. But I think the big message coming out here, we got a state of emergency. We need crisis, humanitarian relief. Now, we don't need to be talking about it. Some master plan down the line. We need the emergency, much like what you've got, Ted, with the Dome Village, tents, whatever it takes.
We have a prototype. Right.
But we need the people's help, your audience's help, though.
Yeah.
We need to hear more from them so that we can take what they're saying and send it to our elected officials, what I said earlier, the conduit.
Yes. But but one of the things I really believe, if we set the stage, they will follow.
Right. But we also need to hear from them, though.
I mean,
if they want to send emails to me, they can send me emails.
Give me your email.
Use Lanck, LANCC, at empowerla.org.
Do it again.
Lanck, LANCC, at empowerla.org.
There you go.
And if they send us, you know, emails, what they think, whether they're for
ideas, whatever support it is. This is the guy, folks, right here. This is the man. Send it to him. He can get something done. He needs to hear from you.
Well, that's what we're all trying to do together.
Yep.
I want to give a quick word about our sponsor.
Yep.
Martinelli's. What a great company.
Martinelli.
Been around 20 years before the Los Angeles home was even around.
They've been your star supporter from the beginning, haven't they?
They are the best. That's a family-run business. Now, if we ran
Are they Patriots?
You bet. You don't get any better than that.
This
is an all-American family right here.
There you go.
And they...
not brewed in China now.
No.
You sure about that?
Absolutely.
All right. No.
This is the real deal.
Don't be slipping one past me.
This is the real deal, and I can't speak highly enough of Martinelli's. They were founded in 1868, 5 years after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And as we wind out, just want to say You know, God bless America.
Absolutely.
And the Veterans Revolution. And we thank Jeremiah with the
Skid Row
Studios
Skid
here.
Row,
this
Skid
is amazing.
Row.
Cheyenne, our
Ooh.
Engineer.
Yes, Cheyenne.
Yeah.
But let's
thank
wind
you,
it out with the...
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Hey, just something a little on the little lighter side for 1 second. I wish there was a better camera. Who does he remind you of? Come on, tell me.
Boy, I don't know.
He reminds you of, what's his name?
I don't know. What's his name?
I had it a minute ago.
What's
Alec Baldwin, the young, look at that
I've
face.
That
look
before.
At that face.
Oh,
Alec
heard
Baldwin. You've heard it before, haven't you?
Yeah, he's
smiling like he's everything.
This guy's got charm.
I know. I said like this, he looked at me, Alec Baldwin. I said, that's not him.
Yeah.
I've met him before, you know, so.
Absolutely, Ted.
You could play him in a movie.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got charm.
No, Alec Baldwin looks like him.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Yeah. I get Dick Gregory all the freaking time, man. I was walking to the airport the other day in Phoenix, Arizona, and the guy looked at me and he was, I said, don't you say it. They said, Dick Gregory? I said, oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
All right. Good night, folks, and stay well.
Stay well, Bob.
God bless America.
Thank you, Bob.
Veterans Revolution.
Veterans Revolution.
Thank you much.